Donald Trump's executive order temporarily banning refugees from 7 Muslim-majority countries has been a major story, with much coverage focused on the widespread backlash to the ban, including legal challenges and rapid response airport protests around the country. But as media critic Reed Richardson notes on Fair.org, coverage of opposition to the ban has also sparked a kind of reflexive counter-narrative within the corporate media. There's a competing genre of story in which, Richardson writes, the press parachutes into red state diners, barbershops, and grocery store parking lots to seek out Trump voters, and only Trump voters, to gauge their support for the ban. The news in these news stories is unsurprisingly unsurprising. Turns out the same people who consistently backed the idea of a Muslim ban during the primaries and after the conventions also like Trump's current Muslim ban. Nevertheless, this dog bites man story has been given pride of place in outlets from the AP to the New York Times to CNN to NPR. It's fine for media to try to understand arguments animating both sides of an issue. But the thing is, there's only one side that's animated over the ban right now. So in effect, these Trump supporters support Trump ban stories share an implicit bias in their framing, which is that overwhelmingly white Trump voters deserve rarefied, privileged attention by the media, even when doing nothing newsworthy. Besides the double standard, says Richardson, these stories show media carving out what you might call a journalistic safe space for Trump supporters to air their support free of context or fact-checking. For example, Richardson found many stories in which Trump supporters conflate immigrating refugees with terrorism. But only one article from Huffington Post bothered to point out the logical disconnect, the risk of dying from a terrorist attack carried out by a refugee being something like 1 in 3.6 billion per year. Russia, of course, has been much in the headlines and with good cause, but some conversations raise the question of just how evolved U.S. media's geopolitics are. When Donald Trump was asked by Fox News' Bill O'Reilly why he wouldn't condemn Vladimir Putin, whom O'Reilly called a killer, Trump responded, "You got a lot of killers. What, you think our country's so innocent?" As Adam Johnson noted on Fair.org, this provoked outrage on the part of liberal patriots, like the New York Times editorial board, whose February 7th column, Blaming America First, said, quote, "Asserting the moral and political superiority of the United States over Russia has not traditionally been a difficult maneuver for American presidents. But rather than endorsing American exceptionalism, Mr. Trump seemed to appreciate Mr. Putin's brutality, which includes bombing civilians in Syria and, his accusers allege, responsibility for a trail of dead political opponents and journalists at home, and suggested America acts the same way," close quote. The perhaps 1 million civilians who died due to George W. Bush's unilateral invasion of Iraq alone would show the absurdity of suggesting respect for civilian lives as something that elevates the U.S. above Russia, before you get to the thousands killed in Afghanistan, Libya, and Syria itself, to name some. And yes, Russia's violent stifling of dissent is terrible, as is the United States' harsh punishment of whistleblowers, infiltration of dissident groups, and bombing of foreign journalists. Johnson suggests our record-breaking incarceration system and persistent institutional racism, if we're going to talk human rights abuses. The paper mentions the Iraq War and torture, calling them terrible mistakes. And it goes beyond implying that whatever harms the U.S. does have the best intentions. Quote, "At least in recent decades, American presidents who took military action have been driven by the desire to promote freedom and democracy, sometimes with extraordinary results, as when Germany and Japan evolved after World War II from vanquished enemies into trusted, prosperous allies," close quote. Well, the point isn't argued, it's just an article of faith that the U.S. killed an estimated 3.8 million people in Vietnam to promote freedom and democracy, despite President Eisenhower's admission that given the chance, 80% of the Vietnamese people would have voted for Ho Chi Minh. or that the use of covert terror to try to overthrow the elected government of Nicaragua, or military support for death squad regimes elsewhere in Central America, were likewise inspired. As Johnson notes, it certainly is not that Trump's motives in questioning American innocence were noble. He was evoking America's own sins, not to challenge them, but to apologize for those of the Russian president and, maybe preemptively, his own. But the media outrage around his comments didn't spotlight that scary cynicism. Instead, it talked down to readers who deserve better with an insistence that the U.S. operates on a higher moral plane. And finally, since Donald Trump announced Neil Gorsuch as his nominee for the Supreme Court, media seem to have coalesced around a few themes. One is about whether any Trump appointment should be blocked as payback to Republicans. That's expressed in the New York Times headline, "Democrats' quandary on Gorsuch, appease the base or honor the process." Spoiler, the paper thinks the real strain is on those in the middle. Another theme is Gorsuch's eloquence and his being hard to pigeonhole as conservative. Apparently, he didn't skip a beat when a friend came out to him as gay. There are stories around concerns about Gorsuch's record on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit. They focus on his justifiably concerning ruling in the Hobby Lobby case, where the chain store won the right to deny employees contraception coverage, and in which Gorsuch described birth control, falsely, as destroying a fertilized human egg. But the lens corporate media use for Supreme Court nominees has some blind spots. In this case, you could read all the elite press have to offer on Gorsuch and never hear about human rights for people with disabilities. You'd have to find ACLU attorney Claudia Center's piece on their website to learn about Huang versus Kansas State University. That was a case brought by assistant professor Grace Huang, who was returning to work after a leave of absence for cancer treatment when the campus broke out in a flu epidemic, leading her to request to work from home for a short period as her immune system was weakened. Judge Gorsuch sided with the school that this request was unreasonable, and he said that disability rights rules aren't meant to, quote, turn employers into safety net providers for those who cannot work, close quote. That call, which Center notes represented errors of both fact and law, went against every other circuit decision on the issue, as well as guidance from the EEOC and the Supreme Court. But a search of major media on Gorsuch and Huang turns up zero stories. Despite disabled people constituting some 19% of the U.S. population, that's nearly one in five people, according to the Census Bureau, how the highest court in the land may affect their ability to work and live just isn't interesting to corporate media. With a president that openly mocks disabled people, that kind of disinterest is even more dangerous. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR.